so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, December 4th, 2015. I am your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here today by our guest co-hosts, Farah Nazarelli.
Hello.
And Carmen Pierce.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there. Farah, I think you need to switch to another mic. Yours isn't working.
Okay. Alyssa and Jackie are away today. Welcome, everyone. The winter months are officially upon us, and if you're like me, you've probably started digging your warmest sweaters and coats out of your closet and bundling up. Of course, many winter clothing items are made from sheep's wool, and it never occurs to most people that wool could be a product of cruelty and suffering. Our feature interview today will be with animal advocacy campaign specialist Ashley Byrne, who will fill us in on the shocking truth about how wool is produced. We'll also talk a little bit about warm, fashionable, cruelty-free alternatives to wool and where to find them. That interview is coming up in just over half an hour, so please stay tuned. Coming up soon, we'll also be talking about vitamin B12, why it's important, how to get it in a plant-based diet, and how to make sure you're getting enough, and common myths surrounding this nutrient versus scientific evidence. We touched on this topic briefly on the show a couple weeks ago, but we felt it merited further discussion. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this show is primarily dedicated to exploring issues under the umbrella of animal rights, but we are concerned with human rights issues as well and believe that the two are inextricably linked. Human Rights Day, an annual international holiday established to honor the adoption and proclamation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, is coming up next week on December 10th. Allison, you had some thoughts to share with us on this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we always like to talk about the correlations between animal rights and human rights. And you might wonder, well, what are those about? Well, we're an animal rights show, and we're going to talk about that today, as we have actually many times in the past, and especially for today. So how many times have you heard people say something like, there are too many human problems in the world that we have to solve first before we think about animals? Or perhaps they've asked you, why don't you care about humans instead of animals? Have you been asked that question before?
All the time.
Yeah. And what about you, Farah? Is that something that comes into your daily or regular discussion between people who just don't get it?
Well, that's not the primary thing that people often comment on. I think it's just people are so uneducated about how easy it is to make the transition to a diet that's compassionate, a diet and lifestyle that's compassionate for all. But yeah, I think that's in the minds of a lot of people, even if they don't ask it.
Yeah, for me, it's a statement that I can find it to be incredibly frustrating to hear. And because, you know, we want people to understand that we're all part of this web of life, all human and non-human animals. And whatever we do to animals affects human beings and vice versa, so incredibly and impactfully. So I just wanted to discuss a little bit what the terms human rights or animal rights mean to you. And when I say animal rights or human rights, what I'm referring to are the rights of these individuals to be treated with respect and compassion, the right for these individuals to not be treated as property, as they are their own beings with their own reasons for existing here on Earth. And I believe that every creature that was put here on this planet was put here to live a life free of slavery, free of torture, and free of oppression, both human and non-human animals, and we must be afforded this right to live freely as such. Any further thoughts to add to that, or have I summed it up?
Well, I would agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, my primary education and experience is in yoga and Eastern spiritualities. And I would say embedded in those ways of looking at the world is this idea of sentiency, that any being, human or animal, has the ability to feel pain or feel joy, has sentiency. And, you know, in Buddhist prayers, when they say, may all beings be free, may all beings be happy, they really are talking about all animals and humans and all beings that have that ability to feel, mm-hmm. feel pain and feel joy. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it hasn't come to light in the way that many practitioners of those spiritualities actually understand that the essence of that was to mean literally all sentient beings.
Mm-hmm. And the fact is that we are all sentient beings. Humans are animals. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's very basic. Human rights equals animal rights, and animal rights equals human rights. And the fact is that we are all part of this web of life. We're all interconnected. We all, everything that, you know, that we do affects animals and vice versa. And I want people to realize that. And I just want people to, you know, just open your hearts and recognize we're all beings of this earth. Every living soul deserves to be treated with respect and compassion rather than with neglect or harm. I always like to think of like putting myself in other people's shoes, mm-hmm. other animals, or sometimes I've said on the show before, in an animal's hoof, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just empathy.
Right. I would add, Allison, that, you know, it seems self-evident to you and to people who embrace that, but it's not self-evident. And partially I would say it's because when you eat a plant-based diet, you become sensitive to life.
Absolutely.
And all forms of life and how life expresses itself. And so it's self-evident that you would not harm life, whether it's in an animal form or human form. It's mm-hmm. just self-evident. Mm-hmm. But I think if you don't have that sensitivity to life, then it's not self-evident. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, part of human culture for millennia has you know, been the opposite. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that. Also, I wanted to quickly let our listeners know that on animalvoices.org, that's our website, you can find many podcasts of past shows that we've done on various animal rights and human rights issues and how they all interrelate. So I'll let you check that out.
Buland Awaz means strong voice in a variety of South Asian languages. Listen to the beat of the South Asian music and the issues that explore the beat of the South Asian mosaic. Listen to Buland Awaz every Monday at 5 here on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Hello, I just wanted to let you know that we're having our 12th annual Roger Santa Claus Parade this weekend and the Vancouver Centre Canada Line Station at Granville in Georgia. And the time start is 11:30, and I would advise you to bring warm blankets and coats.
So we're actually talking there about leafletting, right?
Yes.
The actual parade starts at 1, but this event is a leafletting at the Santa Claus parade.
Thank you. Yes, that's right. So we will be leafletting, yes, before the parade so we can make more of a connection with the people. And thank you.
So another holiday event that's happening, and I'm so excited about this one. First of all, it's exciting that the space that Gorilla Foods used to be in has now reopened as Indigo Age Cafe, which is 100% vegan and has some amazing food. And the big event that I'd like to tell listeners about is they're having a Christmas dinner, which is really going to have an incredible menu of foods. They have like nut nogs and coconut cheeses and apple fennel pomegranate salad, or, you know, lots of really interesting, healthy, delicious, nourishing, and beautiful for the eyes to see also foods.
variable. Yeah, right there.
So, yes. Carmen, you really like that place. Tell us about your experience when you've gone there before.
I walked in there and I was just overwhelmed with the warmth, and I was overwhelmed with, I could feel the compassion from the people behind the scenes, like the preparer of the foods, and just that it was all vegan. There was no, it's organic, and I just felt the presence of the food, and I could sit there and I could eat and eat and eat, and I did.
You know, and I find that when I eat food like that, it's so full of nutrients and so full of life, and it so nourishes you on so many levels, and I just have to like look at the food and I feel like my cells are jumping with joy or something like that, that it's really happy food, it's alive food, it's nourishing food, and Lavena really has an ability to make food also look so beautiful, almost so beautiful that you don't want to eat it, you just want to, you eat it with your eyes when you see it.
You take pictures of it and put it on your Instagram like I did.
I did too. I was able to go there for my birthday last month.
Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to add, just on this whole theme of things that are happening for Christmas and the holidays, like not only this dinner and the parade and leafletting before the parade, but also, you know, this is such a great time of year to give gifts that really not only are present to the person who it's given to, but are a gift for all beings on this planet, you know, to give to charities or organizations that work on behalf of animals, to give the kinds of gifts that are compassionate, embedded in them, you know, and for people to really think about the kinds of things that they want to give as a reflection of their values and the kind of world they want to see.
I wholly agree. My Christmas list this year consists of papaya and apples and unique fruits and vegetables.
That's great. And to give the gift of health that way, right? Rather than be gifting chocolates or things that are full of sugar or things
and
that
packaged.
Really, that's right. That's right. That contribute garbage.
Yeah, because we have, it's all in the packaging, the papaya, the beautiful papaya, and you can eat it all. You can use it as a facial. You know, we can have fun with that, you know, with your fruits.
Yeah, my gift this year was I painted prayer flags for my friends, and I tried to really, in the process of painting, think of a world full of loving kindness where all beings are treated with happiness and treated with respect and dignity and free to pursue their own life.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Great.
Beautiful.
So hopefully we'll be able to pursue that topic a little later on in one of the shows this month, is the option, the ideas about ways to give that contribute to a better world and present a nice gift to someone.
Yeah, I like that. I like that because like it is this time of the year where people are very influenced with the commercialism. Mm-hmm. The store windows, I mean, they are beautiful. However, when I walk by them, I say to myself how I enjoy the beauty, but I also see behind the waste. Mm-hmm. And that really resonates for me, waste and just wanting people to be more aware that, you know, you can put beautiful in the windows. You could do, instead of doing all the beautiful things, you know, instead of putting boxes, they could put, they could do things like gift certificates for, you know, to buy things for like the chicken and the beef and, you know, to be aware of of these things.
Yeah. Speaking of chickens, you wanted to tell us about the chicken vigil.
Yes, I do.
Quickly, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, so I would like to actually, while we're talking about that, I could like to talk about the Liberation BC Chicken Vigil. And it's going to be going on at the northeast corner of Commercial and Hastings on this Saturday, pardon me, December 12th, Saturday, between 3 and 4.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. You're listening to
Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, Coast Salish Territories. Now, a couple weeks ago on the show, we had a brief segment on vitamin B12. We were talking about a question that had come up in the Vancouver Vegans Facebook group about how everybody gets their B12. And this is something of a hot button issue in the vegan community. It's something that is discussed a lot and people have a lot of questions. And I find there's a lot of information floating around, both good and bad, and unfortunately that can lead to a lot of confusion. So we just wanted to spend some time talking about that in a little more depth today. Just what is vitamin B12 and why is it important and how do you get it? So I think one of the things we should mention first is that what does vitamin B12 do? And basically, vitamin B12 is needed for the production of DNA and therefore for cell division and for maintaining nerve cells. So obviously, this is very important. Symptoms of vitamin B12 deficiency can include megaloblastic anemia, in which red blood cells become abnormally large because they can't divide, and nerve damage, which can obviously result in a lot of problems, everything from depression and mental confusion to tingling and numbness in the extremities and to a loss of balance and even paralysis. So pretty serious stuff. The anemia is usually reversible with vitamin B12 therapy, you know, with injections or with high doses of supplements. The nerve damage is usually reversible, but not always. One issue is that another B vitamin, folate, can mask anemia that comes from B12 deficiency. And folate prevents the anemia, but it can't prevent nerve damage. And so if your diet is rich in folate but low in vitamin B12, nerve damage can actually be the first symptom of B12 deficiency. So the reason why this is a concern for vegans is because our diets usually are very high in folate because it's abundant in leafy greens and beans. It's something that most of us eat quite a bit of. So how do we get B12? Well, there are a number of ways. B12 is present in animal products because it's produced by bacteria in the animal's intestines. To the best of scientific knowledge at this point, the vitamin doesn't occur naturally in plants. Unfortunately, and this is where the kind of spread of misinformation comes in, some books and websites will claim that certain plants like sea vegetables, spirulina, seaweed, shiitake mushrooms, tempeh, that sort of thing, are sources of B12. I've seen even some websites will claim that if you buy organic produce and you just don't wash it, then you'll get B12 from that, or if you eat plants out of a garden or something, you'll get B12 from that. But unfortunately, none of these are reliable sources of B12, and many of them contain inactive B12 analogs, which are compounds that are similar to vitamin B12, but they don't actually act as vitamin B12 in the body. And they can even show up in blood tests as vitamin B12. We were talking a couple weeks ago about how a lot of vegans will get blood tests at their doctor, and the doctor will say, "Oh, your B12 level is very high according to the blood test."
That happened to me,
right? Yeah, you were saying. I remember that. Yeah,
and I was saying. Remember, I mentioned a couple weeks ago. I said to the doctor, "Well, how is that possible? I'm vegan, and I don't even really like take any fortified foods. I don't take mm-hmm. a. I don't even. I haven't taken a supplement because last year when I got my B12 checked." The same results came. So I thought, oh, I don't need to take my B12, save my money, like on taking the little pills.
Right.
But now you're telling me, like, okay, so my doctor doesn't know this. So please tell us, what were you going to say?
Yeah, so I just want to clarify. Yeah. You're saying that the blood test measures an inactive form of B12
yes.
that isn't used by the body?
Right, exactly. And it will show up in the blood test as B12, as serum B12, but it doesn't necessarily act as B12 in your body. So, and unfortunately, this was, there's an article on this on veganhealth.org, which I highly recommend if you're looking for accurate vegan nutrition information. They were talking about how medical professionals still use serum B12 tests to evaluate B12 function, even in vegans, but this is not accurate. And the thing is, some foods contain inactive B12 analogs, like we were saying, especially seaweeds. I know in Vancouver, you know, we tend to eat a lot of sushi and that sort of thing. A lot of us eat a lot of seaweed, and many vegans use spirulina and chlorella and that sort of thing in their smoothies or as supplements. And so these can, again, falsely inflate the B12 level because they show up as these inactive analogs. So that's something that is really important to keep in mind, because if you get a blood test and it shows you have a high B12 level, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are not even deficient in B12. So the RDA for vitamin B12 is 2.4 micrograms per day, but 4 to 7 micrograms might be a better recommendation for preventing all the potential deficiency symptoms, including elevated homocysteine levels.
And that would have to do with absorption too, right? Because that's what my doctor said. He said some people absorb it way better than others, but right. Some people might not. So they should aim to get a bit higher.
That's true. Yeah, that is true.
And are all B12 supplements made the same?
Oh, I'm sure they are not, but I'm not an expert on which ones are necessarily the best.
I like the one. I mean, I'm always hearing the sublingual ones are better because they melt under your tongue and it's absorbed straight into your bloodstream as opposed to any others. Sublingual. So you just look on that just means it melts under your tongue.
Right.
And there's many of the B12. You can find them everywhere at any like health food store or the drug store too. They have really. I think it was you, Elise, on the Vancouver Vegans group was saying how, is it Jameson that you get in B12?
Yeah, I just buy, really just buy ones. The ones from the drugstore. Yeah, and they're very cheap.
Yeah, I think I have some of those too. Yeah.
I go to Whole Foods for mine, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Whole Foods has a big selection.
They have, for sure. They have a variety. Selection
and they have the sublingual for sure.
Ones. Yeah, absolutely. Lots of different kinds.
Well, you guys have inspired me now to add B12 supplement to my diet.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I think it's an important thing. Let's see what else. So there are different ways to meet B12 needs. You can eat 2 servings per day of foods fortified with at least 2 to 3.5 micrograms of vitamin B12 each. And you'll need to eat these servings at least 4 hours apart to allow for optimal absorption. Or you can take a daily supplement providing 25 to 100 micrograms of B12, or take a twice weekly supplement providing 1,000 micrograms. That's more like what I do, twice weekly.
I'd like to say something about the B12.
Yeah.
With the research I was doing last night, I found out that the tofurkey, with a 6-ounce serving of tofurkey for dinner on Christmas Day is a 50% of on an average of your B12 intake that
there
you would
go.
Need.
So easy.
Yeah. So it'd be an easy transition.
Yeah. Christmas dinner. And that's true. A lot of foods are fortified with B12. We were talking earlier about Rice Krispies and even, you know, cereals that are very easy to find and very cheap. They often are fortified with B12. A lot of non-dairy milks are fortified with B12. Veggie meats, nutritional yeast is often fortified. A lot of vegans use that for their B12. And so, yeah, it's quite easy to get. And I wanted to, one thing that we weren't really able to touch on very much the last time we talked about this was this whole concept of sometimes people will say to me, well, you know, if you have to take a supplement to get all of your nutrients, then, you know, maybe your diet isn't natural or it's not really complete. And I feel like it's an important thing to address. Actually, again, the site veganhealth.org, which I mentioned before, they have this wonderful and very concise article in the B12 section called "Can a Natural Diet Require Supplements?" And I'm not going to read the entire thing to you, but he makes some really great points. And I wanted to read a couple of these things that he mentions. This is the registered dietitian, Jack Norris. He says, one thing that separates us from our prehistoric ancestors is that we live a lot longer, and poor B12 status has more time to become an issue. I think this is vitally important. Whereas people might have gotten by with less B12 in the past, we need more now to ward off B12 deficiency dementia as we live into our 80s and 90s. And in Western society today, it is easy for vegans to ensure an adequate B12 intake. Vegans who supplement with B12 can have superior B12 status to non-vegetarians who do not supplement. In fact, due to a decrease in the ability to absorb B12 from animal foods as people age, the Food and Nutrition Board says that all people, not just vegans, over age 50 should meet their RDA mainly by consuming foods fortified with B12 or a B12-containing supplement. So again, even people over 50 who eat meat and other animal products should be supplementing B12 in order to ward off deficiency. It's very important. And again, it's because we live longer now, and deficiency in B12 has more time to become an issue than it would have in the past.
Right, and from what I know, B12 deficiency is actually, it's found in omnivores and vegans.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it can easily be found in all sorts of people. And and I feel like, you know, sometimes, again, people will say, oh, well, it's not natural to take supplements and that sort of thing. And this is, you know, I feel like that's placing the focus in the wrong place. This is actually a logical fallacy known as the naturalistic fallacy, this idea that anything that is quote unquote natural is inherently good. Anything that's unnatural is inherently bad.
And I've never imagined that for a human baby to suck the tit of a cow to drink the milk of another species is natural at all.
Right.
Just to mention that whole argument.
Exactly. And we do all kinds of things, you know, every single day that are unnatural. We're using technology right now to broadcast to people on the radio. I'm wearing contact lenses. Carmen's wearing glasses. You know, we're in a heated building. Like, nothing that we do is really, you know, we're not sleeping outside in caves or anything like that. So, it's just a question of, you know, where exactly do you draw the line? What's natural and what's not natural? And I think for me, the focus should really be on, you know, can we survive and maintain optimal health on a plant-based diet? And the answer is absolutely yes. I wanted to quickly mention the position statement of the American Dietetic Association, which I believe has changed its name now to the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. It's the largest association of dietitians and nutrition professionals in the world. And their position statement is, it is the position of the American Dietetic Association that appropriately planned vegetarian diets, including total vegetarian or vegan diets, are healthful, nutritionally adequate, and may provide health benefits in the prevention and treatment of certain diseases. Well-planned vegetarian diets are appropriate for individuals during all stages of the life cycle, including pregnancy, lactation, infancy, childhood, and adolescence, and for athletes. And they go on to say that, you know, vegetarians have lower risk of death from heart disease, lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, lower rates of hypertension, diabetes, and lower rates of overall cancer. So I think it's pretty easy to see, you know, like, this eating a plant-based diet and taking a B12 supplement, you can maintain excellent health, and many vegans are in excellent health. And to me, that's the most important thing. And also, I feel like if all we have to do to remove our contribution to animal exploitation, environmental devastation, waste of resources, waste of water, and to maintain great health is to eat a varied plant-based diet and take a B12 supplement a couple times a week, or eat some fortified foods, like, to me, that's absolutely worth it. If that's all you have to do, that's absolutely
worth
it.
There are so many gains for just taking some care.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Why wouldn't you want to take some care in the way that you conduct your lifestyle, right? Why, why do it mindlessly? We want to live mindfully.
Right, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I feel that, I feel that sometimes I meet vegans who are sort of in denial about this. A lot, you know, some vegans really want to think, okay, if I just eat plants or whatever, then I'm going to be fine and this is ideal, and, you know, we have to just sort of stick to this. But I think that being honest about this stuff and, looking to evidence-based nutrition information, scientific evidence, and spreading that around is really important, because that helps us prevent ex-vegans, right? It kind of, sometimes if people rely on really bad, inaccurate nutrition information, they develop health problems, they develop nutrient deficiencies, and they might go back to eating animals because of that. And then look what happens. More animals are dying, more animals are being exploited. So,
and there's nothing bad that comes from higher doses of B12. There's no associated risk. So
right,
it just
exactly.
makes sense to supplement.
Exactly.
Well, that was very interesting.
Yeah.
That was lovely. I concur.
So now there's some exciting news that's happening. You know, I've always loved Dr. Bronner's soaps. And I was introduced to it when I was doing my master's. And ever since I was introduced to their Castile-based soaps, I just have loved it. And one of the reasons I love it is the message on the bottles and on the labels. It's a message from the founder. And he really would write this message that we're all part of one family. Mm-hmm. And what's fantastic about his company is his son, who's now the CEO, is carrying on that whole view that we are all one, that this planet is something we all share with other sentient beings, that animals also are a part of our family. And he just donated 150,000 to animal organizations. Wow. Which is so wonderful. Incredible.
That's cool.
And it's incredible not only that he gives money away, but that he's an ethical vegan, and so much of the company is based on sustainability and respect for animals and respect for the planet and respect for human beings to use things that don't cause harm in all aspects of the supply chain and all aspects of production. So I just want to encourage people who, you know, would like to find products that are that reflect their values to check out Dr. Bronner's soaps. And the organizations that they donated to included Compassion Over Killing, the Humane Society of the United States, the Humane League, Mercy for Animals, Factory Farming Awareness Coalition, Strongest Hearts, our Hen House and Poplar Springs and Vine Sanctuaries.
Lovely.
So please buy their products and
yeah.
So that they can continue to donate more and more.
Well, what I love about their products is the list of the ingredients. I mean, you feel like you want to put it on your skin. I mean, just like, just rub it in. Like, there's mint and there's like all kinds of these little plants and herbs, and you just like, wow, I just ate that for dinner last night. You know, it's like,
I know. And he always talks about how, you know, they had their multi-purpose soaps. I used to use it as shampoo, but you can use it as shampoo, soap. You can use it as mouthwash. You could use it as laundry detergent. You could use it as dish soap. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would take it on trips where I just needed like one thing that would serve many purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the other great thing.
Exactly.
About the soaps.
That's great. Yeah. And of course, you know, Whole Foods has a section there, and they have I think probably about 3 or 4 of their products.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very, really, really happy that I walked in and found that product, because it's in my home and that's all I use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you're in the shower, you got to read the whole label, because it's so hilarious, the philosophy of his father, who was a very ardent believer that we are part of one family.
Right.
And he would have this message all in one exclamation mark, right. You know.
But maybe borderline crackpot, but you know, it is entertaining.
Yeah. So anyways, the other really exciting piece of news is the first ever social justice themed vegan bar is opening up in Asheville, North Carolina, a vegan bar.
That's
and social
cool.
justice themed.
Cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So, and what's really exciting, it's called The Block off Biltmore. And what's really exciting is it's located in one of the oldest African-American cultural centers in the States, called the Young Men's Institute. And its mission is to celebrate and honor diversity. It was built in 1893. So, you know, it's being housed in a place that was historically important in the civil rights movement, which is really cool. They're going to have a jazz and justice night, and it was the article that announced this was talking about how every part of the building and bar represents a piece of history. So they're using a lot of local relics and stuff that have stories behind them in terms of the place and its history. And let's see, the other thing, why pair veganism with social justice? So One of the founders says, the vegan part is very much a social justice issue. It's social justice on many fronts, for the planet, for the animals, for our health, for starving people, for food scarcity. Resource depletion of every kind, whether it's water, climate change, rainforest, is directly impacted by animal-based agriculture. And thanks to the UN report that came out in 2008, we now know how the link between animal agriculture and environment. So that is what the founder says about this new social justice vegan themed bar that's opening up.
That's awesome.
Yes. So you can get more information on the latest vegan news.
Awesome. And one quick piece of local news. A local reptile rehabilitation center in Mission, BC was raided this Wednesday by the SPCA. The place is called the Reptile Guys Rescue and Education Center, and 14 reptiles and around 40 rats were removed. The SPCA would not comment on the specifics of the case because the investigation is ongoing, but it provided a statement saying it does not execute warrants without evidence that animals are in distress and without giving individuals an opportunity to first address the concerns. This is a little bit shocking, but not shocking for those of us who are familiar with this place, with Mike Hopcraft is the reptile guy. And I think it should be noted that he is a staunch supporter of the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
Thank you.
Moving on, for our feature interview today, we have Ashley Byrne on the show. Ashley is the campaign specialist for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Her work to promote animal rights has landed her on national television programs and in newspapers in the U.S. and abroad, including U.S. News and World Report, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Inside Edition, Fox, and CNN, among many others. She is here today to speak to us about the wool industry. Hello, Ashley, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, great. Thank you for being here. We've never done a show about wool before, and so we'd like to use this interview to get a good overview of the wool industry as a whole and an understanding of the role that the animals play in it. To start, can you tell us about where most of the world's wool comes from and what the wool industry looks like in Canada specifically?
Sure. Well, the wool industry is most concentrated worldwide in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But wool is produced in several countries across the globe, including here in North America, in Canada, and the U.S. As we talk about this today, though, the majority of the practices that I'll discuss and the treatment of the sheep is really something that you find across the board. You know, PETA has done investigations into the wool industry in North America and overseas, and whether we're talking about large corporate farms or so-called sustainable farms, we really found the same things across the board. So for the most part, the things I'm talking about will apply regardless of where the wool is being produced.
Mm-hmm. Great. So people might think that wool is not such a problem because, they think it's just like a haircut. It's not like fur where the animals are skinned. But it's not as simple as that, right? Can you please give us an overview of the process of shearing sheep for the wool industry and how it affects the animals?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, as you say, I think a lot of people think, they're sheep. They're going to grow this wool anyway. It's just like a haircut. They need to be shorn. Frankly, I even, sort of had that impression the first, in the first years after I became vegan. The truth is, though, that like the other industries where we see animals exploited, for profit, at the end of the day, because the emphasis is on making money, the wool industry treats sheep very poorly as a way to squeeze as much profit from each individual sheep as they possibly can. So among the, some of the worst issues are the fact that shearers are paid by the pound. So they work as quickly as they possibly can. And we're talking, the sheep are, very often afraid. They don't want to be held down and shorn, so they're struggling. So we find that shearers will treat them very violently, punching and kicking them, holding them down very roughly. And as they're shorn, because the sheep are struggling, very often they end up with cuts and gashes that will frequently be sewn up afterwards with no painkillers, just a needle and thread and nothing to dull the pain. The shearing process can be so violent that often sheep end up with bits of their ears or their face cut off. In places with more extreme weather, frequently sheep will suffer and even die of exposure during the cold winter months after being shorn. In Australia and some other places, we see use of a technique called mulesing to stop the sheep from getting what's called fly strike, which is basically a maggot infestation on their backsides. Farmers will hack off huge chunks of skin from the sheep's backside with shears, again, with no painkillers. This is just as painful as it sounds. And the reason behind this is because, as I mentioned before, there's this agenda to get as much profit as possible from each individual sheep. So sheep are often bred to grow excess skin and excess wool.
Right.
They're not naturally growing this much wool. It's a breeding technique to get more wool from each sheep, but this causes skin to fold over, which can cause these maggot infestations. And that, again, kind of goes back to this idea that people have that the sheep have to have a haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, of course, sheep did not need haircuts and they'd be just fine without, human shearing them. But because they've been bred this way by the industry to have excessive wool, that's why they end up needing to be shorn. So really, we just see a sheep mistreated in a wide variety of ways to produce wool. And this is on all kinds of farms, including those that are labeled sustainable.
Right. Great points. Thank you. Can you talk to us about the castration of lambs in the wool industry? How is this done?
Absolutely. This is another practice that is done very crudely, without any anesthetics or pain relief. Lambs are just basically mutilated with, these same crude tools that are used in the mulesing process. Sometimes it's also done by putting a tight ring around a lamb's scrotum to castrate the animals, which is extremely painful. This is actually a practice that we found in Argentina at a so-called sustainable humane wool supplier that was supplying brands like Patagonia.
Right. So I know that when sheep are no longer of use to the industry in Australia, they are shipped to the Middle East and North Africa. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. This is a practice called live export. As you say, eventually the sheep's, wool production will decline. And when this happens, they are loaded onto large ships, crammed in as tightly as they, can possibly be. And then they're shipped overseas to North Africa or to the Middle East to be slaughtered for meat. They go through this journey often in, extreme heat. They don't have access to food or water. Many of them fall ill and don't have, any veterinary care. Many animals die. And, of course, the other animals are still packed in tightly next to them. And when they arrive, they are slaughtered in countries where, they have even less protection than they would in their countries of origin. Much like the United States and Canada, the laws in, New Zealand and Australia certainly, don't really spare animals from suffering at slaughter, but there are, at the very least, laws that do more to protect them than in these countries where they're shipped. They go to places where they just really have even less protection from, from abuse when they're slaughtered. So just from start to finish, live export is really a nightmare for these animals.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Ashley. It's Allison here. I know you had mentioned muesling a little bit before, but I wonder, I mean, it's such a horrific practice, and that might have just passed over people's heads, that word muesling, because it's not something that everyone knows about. I wonder if you could go into that a bit more in depth and explain for our listeners what is muesling, what's it all about?
Right, absolutely. Well, muesling is a practice that was developed because sheep were getting maggots under the folds of their skin on their backside. Again, their skin folds over like this because they've been bred to have extra skin, so they'll produce extra wool. As a way of, addressing this, instead of simply breeding the sheep to not have this excessive skin, farmers started just removing the skin, either with crude tools like shears. Literally, they would just lop the skin off. Or sometimes they would bind it very tightly until it fell off. I mean, I say would. They still do this. This is done with no painkillers. It's extremely painful for the animals. And you can see them, when you see videos of this happening, you can see them struggling to walk afterwards. It's mutilating them. And again, it's being done when the logical option would be to simply breed them without this extra skin in the first place.
I was going to say, or just not breed them at all, right?
Right, exactly. Which of course is what we would prefer. But again, if this breeding was going to take place, the least farmers could do would be to not breed the sheep with this, excess skin that they know will cause this problem.
Well, of course, it's all about profits, but I wanted to speak now just about sheep and who they are, because I had the pleasure of getting to know some sheep at a farm sanctuary in Maryland this summer. First time I've ever met a sheep. Actually, there were a whole bunch of them, and I was able to give these sheep some love, and because they actually loved human touch and affection, I found them to be gentle and calm creatures, and I fell in love with them. I wonder if you could speak a bit about the lives and personalities of sheep when they are allowed to live happily, and that is outside of the wool industry.
Absolutely. As you say, sheep are lovely. And I think that people who get the chance to interact with them, as you said, in a sanctuary setting, in settings where they're not frightened, when they're allowed to do what comes naturally to them, find that they are a lot like dogs. They're very communicative, very friendly and affectionate. Interesting facts about sheep, they make different sounds to communicate with each other. They have excellent vision, and they can see 270 degrees around them without turning their heads, so they're very hard to sneak up on. they're very gentle. Just like all animals, they feel pain and fear, and they certainly do not deserve to be used and mistreated for their fleece and their skins. If they're left alone and not genetically manipulated, sheep will grow just enough wool to protect themselves from temperature extremes. Their fleece provides them, when they're left alone, with effective insulation against cold and heat. They're wonderful, lovely, gentle, affectionate animals, when they're not put in these, stressful, terrifying situations.
Ashley, it's Farah here, and I've been listening to what you've been saying, and I'm wondering, is there such a thing as humane wool? And if not, what would you recommend as alternatives for people who live in cold climates?
First of all, there is a lot of wool out there right now that is labeled, with these different feel-good labels, like humane, responsibly sourced, sustainable. At the end of the day, these sheep are being treated just as badly as the sheep who are, producing the wool without those labels. Mm-hmm. Those labels are meant to make consumers feel good. But PETA has investigated, farms that have these labels. And what we found was horrifying. For instance, we did an investigation of a farm in Argentina. They were producing wool that was labeled, responsibly sourced for brands like Patagonia. We found workers doing just unspeakable things, like hacking into fully conscious lambs and starting to skin some of them while they were still alive and kicking. Wow. This is when they were being slaughtered for, for their skins and not just for the, not just being sheared for the wool. We found the same mutilation and abuse and neglect that we've found at, at many other farms that we've investigated that didn't have these nice labels on them. We found the same cruelty during shearing that we've found, in other places. Shearers would stomp on sheep's legs to, get them to hold still. They'd use fast, rough shearing methods that would leave the sheep cut up and bleeding. It was really just horrendous. So when you see labels like this, they are misleading. If animals are being raised in a setting where profit, is the motive, corners are going to be cut and the animals will suffer as a result.
Mm-hmm.
But to speak to your other question, really the only humane wool is vegan wool. And fortunately, this is actually something that exists now. A lot of wonderful companies like coat company Vogue Couture or menswear company Brave Gentleman are using a product called vegan wool. They're using wool that is made from totally animal-free fibers. It's just as warm. It has the upside, besides being cruelty-free for people who suffer allergies when they come in contact with wool, who find it itchy and uncomfortable, of not having those same problems.
Do you know if
it's environmentally sound, which you can't say for sheep's wool?
Do you know if the vegan wool is it plant based or is it synthetic? Do you know?
I think there are actually different types of vegan wool that are made from different things. I know that a lot of brands that are using it make it from recycled synthetic materials.
Mm-hmm.
So, very often it will include things like recycled plastic bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it's a great choice, not just because it's cruelty-free, but because it's environmentally responsible. And we're seeing this used now in everything from coats to, felt hats. To sweaters and other garments. And also on that note, there are a lot of companies out there who are not necessarily vegan companies, but, who are using synthetic, alternatives to wool and have been for years, very often because either, it's less expensive, because they know that a lot of their customers have wool allergies or find it itchy and uncomfortable. So there are so many options out there, either from, the wonderful vegan companies who are, breaking ground with these new materials, or from companies who just choose to use different materials for, for different reasons. So it's never been easier to have, wonderful, warm, weatherproof winter clothing that doesn't harm any animals.
Thanks, Ashley.
Ashley, absolutely. I have a question. What can our listeners do to take action against the wool industry?
That is a great question. I think the number one thing we can all do is to permanently cross wool off of our shopping list. To reach out to our friends and families and ask them to do the same, explain why. PETA has some very hard-hitting videos of exposés that we've done, investigations into the wool industry that you can share with your friends and family to explain why you're choosing not to buy wool anymore and to encourage them to do the same. People can also visit PETA's website to sign action alerts that we have asking companies not to use wool and, not to work with these suppliers that have been investigated and shown to have these, you know, very abusive practices. And, you know, I think that another thing we can do is to let, you know, let the brands we like and the companies we like know that we don't want to see real wool in their stores and on their shelves. You know, it's always a good thing to let them know that there is a demand for kind, environmentally responsible products, and that just does not include wool.
Okay, thank you. I just have a quick question again in regards to, is PETA doing anything for educating, like for the schools with the sheep, like nice talking about how old that they do live and what kind of life that they do have, so that people like at the early stages can see that these animals are sustainable just like themselves, like us?
Well, we have a great program called Teach Kind that provides educational materials for teachers who want to educate their students, you know, about animal issues. And that covers the wool industry in addition to, you know, and sheep, you know, in a kid-friendly way, in addition to many other issues. And, you know, anybody who has kids in their family who, you know, they want to start out early, you know, in terms of educating them about animals and the fact that all animals feel pain and fear and deserve our compassion, can find a variety of materials on PETA's website, from, you know, comic books that, you know, talk about animals and, you know, let kids know the truth about how intelligent and curious and friendly animals, you know, who they might not know as well, like sheep and chickens are, to, you know, stickers and just a lot of different things that, you know, as you said, can help kids get started early having, you know, having this compassion for animals. And I think that compassion comes very naturally to kids. You know, I think that most kids understand very quickly, you know, that animals do deserve their respect.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Ashley, to tell us the truth behind the wool industry. This has been very informative and eye-opening. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
For sure. So again, yeah, some of those companies with alternatives to beautiful, fashionable alternatives to wool clothing. For men's suits, Brave Gentleman is a great one. And for warm, beautiful winter coats, Vaute Couture, that's V-A-U-T-E. Both of these were ones that Ashley mentioned and ones that I personally would recommend. Also, I find if you ever want to find, you know, vegan sweaters, vegan suits, vegan coats, just Googling these things brings up lots and lots of great results. Yeah, so that's it for our show. Again, you're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. You can find us on, you can reach us by email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com if you have ideas for the show. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR or on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver.
I just wanted to talk quickly about next week's show. Please do join us next Friday, December the 11th. We'll be having some special guests on the show. Tracy Stewart, who has just written a new book called Do Unto Animals. It's a beautiful book. She'll be on the show to tell us about her life and how to treat animals more kindly. And we'll also have Jane Land from the campaign Veganuary, that is to commit to a whole month of going vegan in January, on the show. Please do send us, you already said, send us your suggestions at Radio Animal Voices @gmail.com. We're closing the show with a song by Elise.
This is by my band The Living. It's a song called Humankind.
Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.